Stephanie looked at me and said,
"Let's just go."
And I knew exactly what she meant, and I was ready to do anything for Stephanie, anything. And so I just fell into her eyes and I said, "Let's just go."
This episode of Here Be Monsters is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own website, portfolio, and online store. For a free trial and for 10% off, visit squarespace.com and enter the offer code MONSTERS at checkout. A better web starts with your website. And it's one thing for me to read off that script and say like this, 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 and this about Squarespace, but it's another thing entirely when you're actually in there, like trying it out for yourself. And when Here Be Monsters first started working with Squarespace, we were really amazed by like how fast and easy it is to edit the content and edit the templates, and it's also quick to get started. So the free trial lasts a full 14 days, and the promo code MONSTERS will save you some money at checkout at squarespace.com. Here Be Monsters, the podcast about
fake names and fake social security numbers.
The podcast about
the unknown.
My first love of my life was Stephanie in Oklahoma City when I was in high school. And I'd had girlfriends before that, but Stephanie was the first one I was really flipped for. I met her one night at this dance club place called Kinetics. I was actually out on a date with a good friend of hers, and she'd come along. And the friend and I, we didn't really hit it off, but Stephanie and I just fell for each other hard that night. I could only think she was just so out of my league. I was a nerdy little kid and picked on in school and all that kind of thing. And Stephanie was like everything I'd ever wanted. She was smart and she was cute and she was clever and she was more than cute. She was beautiful. And she liked me for some inexplicable reason. And so I had pretty much fallen head over heels for her. And we ended up at some point splitting up. I think not my idea, but we split up because she had been getting together with some friends of mine. I actually don't think I split up with her despite that. I think she like had sex with my friends and then dumped me or something. But strangely, we were still good friends. So Stephanie and I were still friends despite having this falling out. You know, it's very obvious to me at that point that I'm still pretty hung up on her. My dad's really, really strict. He's a religious conservative. He's a Republican. He plays golf all the time. He's a corporate tax attorney. He is part of the like moneyed evangelical community. So he was always very, very strict with me. Stephanie is 16, lives with her mom, who's also very strict, but in a different kind of way than my dad. She's kind of Joan Crawford-y, scary strict. My senior year, I'd quit living with my dad in Edmond, Oklahoma, and I'd moved in with my mom in Moore, Oklahoma. And could kind of do anything, didn't really have any rules or anything. So I got my own apartment. And my dad thought I was still living with my mom and more, but in fact, I was living in this apartment in Oklahoma City with this guy named David. One evening, Stephanie comes over, she's hanging out at the apartment pretty late, maybe midnight, and David drives her home. And I go to bed. Well, about 15 minutes later, I get a phone call, and it's Stephanie, and she's totally freaking out.
My mom knows I snuck out. She's sitting awake in the living room. My bedroom window is closed and locked. I'm scared to go home. I don't want to go home.
And, you know, I was ready to do anything for Stephanie, anything. And so I immediately got in my car, my old piece of junk, 1976 Chevy Laguna, the Blue Laguna, I used to call it. I drive over and I pick up Stephanie. I was going to have to be at work at 4 or 5 the next afternoon. The next morning, before my shift started, I run into my manager and he goes,
"You've been getting a bunch of phone calls all day."
So I'm like, "Huh, wonder what's going on." So I call my apartment and David answers. And when he does, he sounds really kind of weird. And he's like,
"You won't believe what's going on. Your dad was just here."
And at that point, I just start panicking because my dad doesn't even know I have an apartment. He thinks I live in Moore with my mom. And I'm kind of scared of my dad. Not just kind of, I'm horrified of my dad, like all good Midwestern kids. Then he says, "And the police have been here, and Stephanie's mom has been here, and she hired this private investigator who she has told he should break your arms if, you know, you're found or something." I mean, obviously the guy's not going to, but that's just where Stephanie's mom is at. Stephanie looked at me and said,
"Let's just go."
I knew exactly what she meant, and I was ready to do anything for Stephanie, anything. And so I just fell into her eyes and I said, "Let's just go."
Just go. Just go. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So we quickly make this plan to head towards Portland. I had a cousin who lived in Portland when I was a little kid, so I'd been there once or twice before. I just thought it was a pretty place. So I hadn't spent enough time there to know the town very well, but it seemed like a good enough place to move to. So we're like, yeah, we'll go to Portland. That sounds like a great plan. So we head off. As we're leaving town in Oklahoma, as we're leaving Oklahoma City, we call my friend Shane. And we ask him to bring us some clothing on the road. And we're really sneaky about it. We just say, get on I-40 and start going west and, you know, we'll stop you. So we basically hid behind a billboard, wait till we see his car go by. Then we like followed him and flashed our lights to get him to pull over. And he brought us one tape. I had this terrible cassette deck that I had installed myself. And I think I had even installed it wrong, maybe didn't ground it or something, because whenever you stepped on the gas, there was this like high-pitched whine that would increase. So for the remainder of the story, you have to put The Cure, Standing on a Beach, the singles, as the soundtrack to all of this, because we listened to it over and over because that's the music that we had. So we head off northwest again, and we're pretty broke at the time, and we left with a little bit of money because we cashed my paychecks the day that we left, but my car is a 76 Chevy Laguna, got like 3 miles to the gallon or something, and so it was everything we could do to keep it on the road and running, like between gas and oil and, you know, little repairs here and there all along the way. And so we didn't really have much money for anything else. So the way we were eating is we'd go through drive-thrus. We'd say,
"Hey, you know, I was here 2 hours ago, and I ordered 3 Burrito Supremes, but I only got 2 of them."
The nicer the neighborhood, the more food they'd give you. Try and pull that in a poor neighborhood, and they'd be like, "Screw you, you weren't here an hour ago. Like, get out of here, or we're going to call the police." But you go into a rich neighborhood, the manager would come out and apologize, and they're like, "Oh, we're so sorry, sir." And they would give you all this free food at these fast food places when you just complained about the service that you imaginarily gotten. Worked great. We ate all the way across America that way. Get as far as Denver. And while we're in Denver, we're in a grocery store there. And we get caught shoplifting. And fairly minor shoplifting. As I recall, we were taking deodorant and Tylenol and toothpaste and condoms. Oh, the condoms. We were together again now. After, you know, starting to take off and running across the country this way, we're only about a day, day and a half out at this point, but it doesn't take long as being fugitives from the law to get into that Bonnie and Clyde romantic space. And so we're together again now. So I'm happy because, like, you know, yay, Stephanie's my girlfriend again. And we were in love having an adventure running across the country. But we get arrested in Denver. We wait for the police to come. They've got us in the back room at the grocery store that we get arrested in. They left us in this room together with no one else for a while, an hour or two, while the police came. And so we made up this elaborate story. We made up fake names and fake social security numbers. I had a fake ID that I had actually been arrested with buying beer a couple of years before, you know, the typical kind of high school fake ID. But I remembered the information from it because you're supposed to memorize and learn the information on your fake ID. So I actually used that information when we got arrested. Stephanie also used a fake name and fake social security number. And we gave these to the police, and we spent a night in jail.
The next day, we actually got arraigned in Denver, and the judge gave us, you know, using these fake names and fake social security numbers and fake ages and everything, the judge gave us records and said, "Well, you've got 6 months of probation. If you don't get arrested again in Colorado in the next 6 months, this will go off your record." And then they let us go, and that was that, which was pretty scary, but pretty amazing that, you know, here we've just gotten out of jail in Denver using aliases.
They never knew that we had a car or our real IDs or anything because our IDs were in my car, which was in the parking lot of the grocery store, just sitting there the whole time. So after giving us this deferred sentence the next day, they let us out of jail. We got in my car and quickly tried to get out of Colorado.
So we head out again. We have some car trouble that was more expensive and a bigger deal of car trouble. And that was the last bit of money, essentially, that we had.
It becomes clear that we're not going to have enough money. There's just no way we're going to make it to Portland.
As we're approaching the border to Idaho, going north, about to head west,
Stephanie says, well, I have this friend who lives in Boise, Idaho. Let's give him a call and see if we can stay there for, you know, at least long enough to earn a little money or something and get ourselves on to Portland. So she calls up this friend of hers, who she apparently went to kindergarten with and hasn't talked to in years. And not only does he remember her and everything, but here's the crazy part. He has already been contacted by this private investigator who's looking for us. So he'd gotten a hold of like everyone that had been in Stephanie's address book. He's like, well, I think I can hook you up with a place to stay in the short term.
And so he takes us to this apartment of this group of Mormon punk rockers. And who knew that there were Mormon punk rockers? I mean, this was a new subculture to me. There were about four or five of them, all guys, in this apartment. The main kind of activity in the apartment was that they played lots and lots of like strategy games. They were Mormon enough that they didn't get drunk in their apartment all the time, but they weren't so strict that they didn't drink Coke. So there was a lot of Coke and Pepsi and stuff going on in the apartment. Kind of your typical role-playing strategy board game kind of enclave, except with partially shaved heads and Mormonism. The next couple of weeks, we started to kind of work out a life.
Stephanie's gotten a job that won't be traceable because she just put up an ad in the laundry room and said she would do people's laundry, babysit their kids, that kind of thing. So all paid in cash under the table. So there's no way for us to be found that way. And I had gotten a job at a car wash, also without having to show them an ID and without using a real social security number or whatever. So things are starting to kind of work out. It turned out everything was going to be all right. We're going to have a little bit of money without being busted, basically. So since we thought everything was going well, I called my friend Shane.
And Shane had been the friend that brought us the clothes on the side of the road.
How's everything in Oklahoma? Have things calmed down?
And he was in a bit of a panic when I called him. And he was like,
you won't believe what all has happened.
Apparently the whole investigation looking for us was centered on Florida. The private investigator had gone to my mom's house. This private investigator interviewed my little brother, the 6 or 7 year old Stephen. And Stephen made up this just elaborate lie, saying that on my desk that I had airplane tickets to Florida and that we must have gone to Florida. I have no idea why. I mean, I had no desire to go to Florida. I never mentioned Florida. I certainly couldn't have afforded airplane tickets to Florida. He told it like we had a plan, you know, that this was this thing that we'd been working on, scheming about.
So Stephanie's mom completely freaked out. In our absence, Stephanie's mom had actually gone to court and had me legally declared an adult. And the FBI is involved in this. If you're not back here by midnight tomorrow night, this was a Friday morning that we called, so midnight Saturday night, then the FBI was going to press charges. Apparently, they give a deadline and they say, if you ever are caught, we'll press charges. Well, the charges I'm looking at are taking a minor across state lines for immoral purposes, statutory rape, and kidnapping. About 30 plus years. I'm pretty scared. Shane tells me this. I'm like,
you know, Stephanie, we got to go home. We gotta go back to Oklahoma.
So I make the hardest phone call I've ever made in my life. I call my dad and tell him the story and where we're at. And he says he'll buy us plane tickets back to Oklahoma.
We had kind of our last day and night in Boise. We had already had plans for that Friday evening, which we went ahead and followed through with and went ahead and did, which was we went into some guy's house whose parents were out of town and played laser tag in his big house all evening. Big, you know, mansion of a house, like laser tag through all the halls and stuff. That was our big last hurrah. Next day, we, you know, got up and packed up and we got on an airplane from Boise, flew back to Oklahoma City.
And of course, the whole way on the airplane, it's, I love you, I'll always love you. You know, and we're completely 110% back together at this point, and we're always going to be in love with each other and they'll never take us apart. And turns out, it didn't quite work out that way. Got back to Oklahoma.
And our parents met us at the airport. And my dad was surprisingly cool. It was kind of the beginning of a better relationship between he and I. He treated me as an adult who had made a mistake rather than as a kid he could control.
Somehow, over the course of the rest of that summer, Stephanie and I drifted apart.
We never had a fight. We never agreed to break up or anything like that. We weren't sort of punished and told we could never speak to each other again. We just kind of drifted apart. within a couple of weeks of college, I had met someone else and fallen for somebody else and went off to start another relationship. Stephanie, likewise, had met someone else and gone off on her own separate way. And we kind of just lost contact with each other. In some ways, I kind of think maybe we both wanted to kind of end it there just so we could have this amazing adventure and story and memory instead of grinding it into the ground where so many relationships end up. I ran into her again 3 or 4 years later. She was married and had a kid and had grown up a lot. And that was the last I saw of her. You know, even now, it's interesting, but thinking back about it, you know, she's the only ex-partner, only ex-girlfriend that I have that I sort of still have a thing for. And it's not even who she is today. I don't even know who she is today. I think you're always a little bit in love with your first love. I don't think that ever really goes away. And that's a good thing. I mean, that's one of those great experiences and joys of life.
Today's show was recorded by Alex Keim. He's a writer and an audio engineer living in Chicago. The piece was co-produced by Alex and myself, Jeff Entman. Our story editor is Bethany Denton. The former fugitive who you heard from, David, now lives in Washington State with his wife and daughter. Today, David teaches sociology at a local community college and tends to a garden and pretends to know what he's talking about when it comes to fancy whiskey. He was also an original member of Seattle's most controversial marching band. It was called the Infernal Noise Brigade. And you can find this really crazy video of them marching at the WTO riots back in 1999 over at our website. That's hbmpodcast.com. There, you'll also find photo galleries and the entire podcast archive and this giant list of ways to listen to the show. That's all at hbmpodcast.com. Most of the music that you heard on today's show was an original composition by Justin Laforte. You also heard a track from Lucky Dragons. Okay, let's end the show with something that will make you smile. I want to play for you something. A while back, we solicited short shout-outs from Here Be Monsters beta testers. These were people who helped get the new podcast website ready. And I'm just going to speak for myself on this one here, but this is one of the best things I've ever heard. So, brace yourself.
Hi, this is Danielle and Robin Lee from Madison, Wisconsin, and we wrote you a little ditty.
Here Be Monsters! Here Be Monsters! Here Be Monsters!
Thanks for listening.
Monsters.
Thank you.